Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte. This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles, just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Hey, this is Rich Ward, the Duke of Metal from Fozzy and Stuck Mojo. And you're listening to Talking Metal because you have good taste. And you know how to spend your spare time.
Molson Canadian presents Heavy Montreal. August 7th, 8th, and 9th, outdoors at Parc Jean-Tropez. Featuring Slipknot, Faith No More, Korn, and Alexis on Fire. 3 full days of rock and metal with Lamb of God, Iggy Pop, NoFX, Billy Talent, and many more. Festival passes on sale now. For the full festival lineup, visit HeavyMontreal.com. Produced by Avenco.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 527 of the Talking Metal Podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Heavy Montreal, and coincidentally, one of our guests on today's show, Rich Ward of the band Fozzy and Stuck Mojo, will be playing at Heavy Montreal this summer, and we will definitely try to connect with him backstage at Heavy Montreal for a follow-up interview. Rich is a great guy. I also had the recent privilege of hanging out with him and doing a That Metal Gear segment, which is up on VH1.com and YouTube. I will link it through today's show notes if you want to check it out. And we also have Chris and Rob from the band Impellitteri, I don't know. And Mitch LaFon, how are you? Co-host.
Good. Yeah, thank you. I'm the same with you with the band, with Chris and Rob. I somehow mispronounced that in ways that they couldn't even have imagined. So there you go.
Yeah, I think it's Impellitteri.
I think so.
Yeah. I think that's it.
But Chris, I'm not sure.
Just a great, great guitar player.
And I haven't released this episode yet, but I just spoke to Ken Mary, who was a drummer on a lot of their albums. He also drummed with Alice Cooper and a bunch of others. But we've got a whole Impellitteri thing going on. So there you go.
Yeah, and guys, Mitch actually conducted the interview with the guys from Impellitteri. So not only is he today's co-host on this episode of Talking Metal, he also conducted one of the two interviews. And you had both guys on the phone for this interview, right?
Both guys at the same time. And that made for an interesting vibe, because I'd ask a question and they didn't know who was going to answer it first. So that was kind of interesting. But they've got that new album, Venom, which fans seem to be really digging, you know? And yeah. they'd be a good addition to Heavy Montreal at some point, by the way.
Definitely. And let's talk a little bit about Heavy Montreal, because there's been some new additions, including one I know that you're really excited about.
Yeah, you know, they added Extreme doing the Porno Graffiti album. And what's interesting is that they've put them on the same night that Korn is going to do the 20th anniversary of the first Korn album, and then you've got the Porno Graffiti guys doing, I think it's the 25th anniversary of Porno Graffiti. So you've got two album shows taking place the same night at Heavy Montreal, and that'll be exciting. And I haven't seen Nuno Bettencourt live since probably like 1991 or so. So that'll be fun to see him out there and get him out of the Rihanna sphere for a while.
That's right. He is the guitar player who tours and I think even does some recording with Rihanna.
Oh, he's fully involved in the whole Rihanna camp. So I think it'll be a good summer vacation for him. And, what a great night. In fact, the guest that you have on tonight from Fozzy will also be on that night. So it'll be Korn, Fozzy, and Extreme all on August 7th. So there you go. Perfect. Excellent. Perfect night.
And that's the Friday night?
That's the Friday night, yeah.
Okay. Well, we were just talking before we started the podcast if I would come up on Friday or Saturday, but I think that decides it for me. I'm going to need to be there to see my buddy Rich Ward on Friday with Fozzy. And they just put out a great record last year. We're going to hear a little music off of that in a bit. And real exciting news. I mean, Rich Ward was a part of this band, Stuck Mojo, who, you know, maybe didn't have the popularity that bands like, let's say, Korn or Rage Against the Machine had. But they were one of those bands that really helped start the whole, I don't know what you want to call it, rap rock or new metal genre, and we're definitely a big part of that. I have this big heavy metal family tree that Mr. Sam Dunn put together on my wall in the basement, and he has them listed as one of the founders and one of the main bands in that whole movement. I ask Rich during the interview what he thinks of the whole new metal term and being associated with that movement, at least the way I remember it. I asked him about that. So we can definitely check that out and hear what Rich has to say. And Rich is a great guy. I really love this guy. So let's start off with a little Fozzy music, and we'll follow that up with my interview with Rich Ward. Again, Rich is the guitar player in Stuck Mojo and, of course, Fozzy. And this is from the 2014 release by Fozzy, Do You Wanna Start a War? This is the title track. This is a great song, man. You gotta check this out. Start a war, start a fire, start a roar. Hey, this is Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and joining us on the phone, we have guitarist Rich Ward, known for his work with Fozzy and, of course, Stuck Mojo. Rich, how are you?
Man, better than I deserve, as always. Thanks for making some time to speak with me today, Mark. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for talking with us, A, and B, for hanging out with me on the set of That Metal Show and also doing the That Metal Gear segment, which I just thought was a lot of fun to be able to speak with you and walk through your whole rig. That was great.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, there's two things that I'm passionate about, and that's a guitar rig and guitar talk, and then the other thing is sleep. So we covered one of my passions. It's perfect.
Cool. Well, before we started rolling the tape here, you mentioned you're in the studio working on some drums, programming some drums, I think you said. What are you working on right now in the studio?
I'm working on the new Stuck Mojo records. We had kind of talked about the possibility of doing a new Stuck Mojo record near the end of last year, but we wanted to play this reunion show the day after Christmas to see how it went first, the four of us have not played live for that lineup since 1998. It was just important for us to all get one gig under our belt, see how the chemistry was, and see if it was something that we all wanted to do. The show went killer. We had a great time. It seemed like maybe even the band was a little better than we were, 16 years ago, and part of that could be just down to all of us have continued to work hard on other bands and projects and made a lot of records, and maybe we've gotten better individually in honing who we are as players and musicians and artists, or whatever terms. It's hard to say artist when you just play bar chords and riffs and, two and snare on kick. And
right.
It's like at some point I get a little funny about that title, but nonetheless, we played the show, went great, and so we're moving forward with it. And any chance that I have that we're not on the road doing shows, I'm in the studio every day. I have a space. It's about 30 minutes from my house. I do have a great home studio, but I found that it was putting me in a position where if I lacked a little bit of discipline, I could just walk out of the room and then I'm in my house. And so I went and bought a standalone building to put the studio in so that I can work outside of my comfort zone. And so I treated the room and brought all my gear down. And so I've been running on that, and I have my trusty Easy Drummer tune track program that I have done I've written every record for the last 5 or 6 years on it. It's a great piece of software. And I've got my Les Paul and my Kemper.
Right on.
So I mean, I've got the building blocks of making records, and I've got a 5-string bass here, and I've got some great Ampeg profiles. And,
cool. So right now you're just demoing stuff, or you're writing?
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm writing and demoing it. Now, sometimes things that I do actually make the record. If there's a performance that I really like, I'll keep it. But a lot of times, because I like the Kemper a lot, and I have some great profiles, but I do play differently when I'm kind of writing and demoing than when I'm, actually tracking for the album, because my mind is more into the part as opposed to the performance when I'm demoing things, because I'm still trying to fine-tune what's the part, where's the pocket, how am I phrasing this. So a lot of times I'll listen to my demos, and they're great because they're exactly what they're supposed to do, which is just kind of be a blueprint for the song and a chance for my bandmates to hear the jams and a great starting point. But every once in a while, you'll have a solo that I'll play, or there'll be just some badass riff that I do that I just want to keep, and that's why it's important to, like in the old days, we would use, whatever. I was using that Korg Pandora, which is basically like the next evolution of the Rockman back in the 90s. That was kind of my go-to box for demoing guitars, and it never really sounded great. It was great to get ideas down, but it was process sounding. But things have just come so far And like I said, the Kemper's such a great piece because they're my amps.
Right on.
I mean, I've got all my amps modeled and profiled, and they sound great. So yeah, it's been cool. When I spent the money on good gear for my studio, I bought ATI mic pre's and distressors, and I couldn't record a band in here because I don't have. This is an overdub studio. It's not set up for tracking drums, although okay. I do have an electronic drum kit here, and I could do some demos, but it's not really set up for that. It's more of a writing studio, and I recently worked with the singer from Scorpion Child. I'm doing some co-writes with him for his next record. So he came here, and it's a great studio for that because.
Excellent.
I've got a nice selection of vocal mics, and I've got the preamps, and you know, so I've got the things that if I wanted to do album vocals or cut, you know, bass stuff, I could do it here. So, and eventually, I'd love to have my own full kind of studio. I don't really see myself as an engineer producer that would run a studio for hire, but certainly having something to be able to create my own records. And moving forward would be amazing.
Now, as far as you mentioned producing, and as far as producing the album that you're now working on, the Stuck Mojo record on, can you fill the Talking Metal listeners in on who's going to be producing it with you guys?
Yeah, Andy Sneap, who produced our two biggest records for Stuck Mojo in the 90s, and he also was really involved in wearing many different hats in the early incarnation of Fozzy. He actually played gigs with Fozzy for a while on guitar. And he's been one of my best friends in the world for years, and he's taught me everything I know about producing, and I just learned so much from him. And the thing is that with budgets the way they are for albums, it's difficult. And Andy would, because we're friends, would help me out with, you know, giving me the friend rate, but I don't want to ask my friends for friend rates when it comes to business because that always can be kind of awkward. And Andy knows that if he ever needed me to come in and cut guitars on something that he needed me to because he felt like my playing was appropriate for it, he'd pay me because
right.
at some point we're professional musicians. And but he knows that if he didn't have the budget, he knows I'd do it for him for free. But I think we've just had that kind of relationship because we've known each other since I met him in 1997.
Wow.
I was on tour with Stuck Mojo opening for Typo Negative in near his town of Nottingham, England.
Wow.
And he came out to the show, was recommended by Borivor, who runs Blabbermouth. He was my A&R guy at Century Media. And he says, you've got to work with Andy Sneap. I think he's the perfect guy for Stuck Mojo. So Andy came down to the show. And I'll never forget our meeting. We always laugh about it. He came up and he said we were just kind of sniffing each other's butts as musicians do. And and I said, hey, just one question: do you like the way that the Ross Robinson Korn kind of production sounds? He says, no, I don't like it. And he goes, I have an original Randy Rhoads pick though. And I said, do you want to go on the bus and listen to Dio? And then we've been best friends ever since.
Wow.
I mean, we were kids then. You know, we were. We were both kids. And we've, you know, grown up and had nice music careers. And it's been cool to, and it's been great to see him do so well, you know, doing Megadeth.
Yeah, I mean, he's become like this, like, go-to producer for metal. I mean, a lot of times, even with older bands, like Accept, we've seen them, you know, him kind of recapture their classic sound, which the guys in Accept have told me they were having trouble doing on their own before they started working with Andy.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, my friend, Ed Aborn, who is a friend of the kind of Fozzy family, was the one that hooked them to get up together.
Oh, wow.
Because he's very good friends with Wolf. He does Wolf's online stuff,
cool.
His band stuff and his photography stuff. So I was honored to kind of be there. I actually stayed at Wolf's farmhouse when Andy was there and they first started working on the demos for the first album. And it was interesting because they were really wanting Andy's input as a huge Accept fan, and I was a massive Accept fan as well. So it wasn't just a a Sonic thing, but there was actually some prodding from Andy for them to make a heavier, more aggressive record, and to kind of stay away from some of the tendencies that Accept had to be a little bit more of a rock band at times, and which I liked the rock stuff they did as well, but it was nice to kind of see that. And again, being a musician has afforded me some things that are just as rewarding as making records, which is talking to people that I grew up loving. You know, talking to Wolf Hoffman on the phone, or, you know, talking to Zakk Wylde on the phone. Like, this, being friends with people that I grew up thinking were the greatest of all time, and now I'm working in a field with guys who I'm, you know, like, fortunate to kind of be buddies with, which has been great, you know?
Absolutely. I want to talk to you about Stuck Mojo and just their influence on what has kind of become known as this new metal genre. A lot of times when people talk about new metal, they say, oh, well, Stuck Mojo is kind of one of the, if not the godfather of that whole movement. How do you feel about that title? A lot of people in the press, there's kind of this love-hate relationship with the term new metal. And is that something that you like hearing when it comes to your band Stuck Mojo, or not?
I don't really have an opinion on I don't have a judgment on how people want to describe what it is that Stuck Mojo does, because I hear Queen records, and the same Queen record that somebody else hears and describes a certain way, I may describe differently. And so I'm okay with, if someone likes Stuck Mojo and says, hey, you guys are new metal, or you're rap rock, or you're crossover, or you're rap core, I'm just thankful that anyone even listened to us. And if they like us, man, that's even a bonus. So I try not to get too emotionally attached to all of the kind of labels, because the truth is that in 1989, I'm a rock metal kid living in Atlanta, and glam metal was the big thing, and there was a all-black rock band from Atlanta called Follow For Now, and I was fascinated with the idea of this kind of crossing of cultures in music. And the Chili Peppers were doing it, even though there wasn't a racial component. There certainly was this cultural diversity that felt so different from what, you know, Dokken and Slaughter and some of the other Winger, those bands that were really big at the time, especially in Atlanta and the South. It was like you had Southern rock and then you had hair metal.
Right.
And that was what was big. And I still liked those bands. It's just that I was really attracted to, then I was very fortunate to see an advertisement that had Lars Ulrich being quoted as saying, go see this band, they're one of the greatest bands of this generation, and it was Faith No More, and I saw them in a club play in front of nobody.
Right. Wow.
And I was just blown away by that. Like, here's guys who didn't look like anything I'd ever seen before, playing music that was nothing like I'd ever seen before. And that was the catalyst for me, you know, creating Stuck Mojo, was just trying to find a little plot of land that I could stick a flag in and say, this is ours.
Right.
We
on.
Don't sound like this. We don't sound like that. And then I started getting into Morbid Angel and heard Sepultura. And then I, Devin Townsend, Strapping and Lad, and then Fear
sure.
Factory and Machine Head. Like, all those bands were coming out in the mid-90s, and we started, like I said, in the late 80s. I mean, Stuck Mojo formed in 1989, but we were still a young band with young players, and we were still trying to figure out who we were and what the formula was and how was our chemistry, because we went through a few lineup changes. But I think we just were doing something honest. And we had a black rapper and a black bass player and a white metal guitar player and a white metal drummer. And it was just so different, because it was a clash of cultures and it was a clash of styles. And sometimes you end up mixing some things together that works, and sometimes it sucks. And there may be even people that say, hey, well, I thought Stuck Mojo sucked, and fair enough. Who am I to say what you should like and not? But we were doing something pretty different, and it
right.
was unique. And we were still playing in these little dirty dive bars all over the Southeast. And it was like seeing people's faces going, It was like, I guess, the first time that you ever saw a black trumpeter walk into a jazz club in like the 20s or something. It was like,
yeah, wow.
It was the craziest thing. It was just, it was great. And it was empowering to me to like be part of something so different. And I never tried to be a funk guitar player. I was a metal guy. It was just how my influence just cross-sectioned with our funk reggae bass player and our rapper who couldn't sing anything because he had no idea about melody. He was just a pissed off black guy who had a rough life, who'd been in prison, who just had, he had a story and had an outlook on life that I just had no idea even existed. It was only, that culture only existed on TV and in movies to me. So it was that clash of cultures and clash of style and approach to music that made us, I thought, a really good band, which is why I still love doing that band. Like, I have great success with Fozzy, and we do great things, and I make money, and I love my band, but it's a different animal. When you walk on stage with something that's slightly dangerous, and I don't mean to the audience, I mean to me, too. Like, there's an energy, and there's something that happens in Stuck Mojo that is very unique, and it's almost like a drug for me, and I really like it.
Cool.
And also, it allows me to, you know, write. The beautiful thing about having a multicultural band is you can say things you can't say when you're a bunch of white guys in a metal band. You can say counterculture things that you're going to get a pass on because there is a diversity of race and there's a diversity of ethnicity. And that's the one thing that I really love is being able to do things that other bands can't, which is pretty freaking cool.
Absolutely. And let me ask you now, I know you've had a relationship with Frank, the drummer, that has gone on, you know, for years and years. But what about the other guys in Stuck Mojo? Did you have to really straighten things out? Did you have to address some of the problems that caused them to split from you and Frank in the first place? And how did that go?
The first meal, because we didn't even rehearse. What we did is I just said, let's just get together and have a meal and sit at a table together. We hadn't spoken in years. And it went great. Everybody was hugs and love and this and that. But the truth is that the four of us are never going to get along like brothers again. There's just too much, like, riding around in a van. Because Stuck Mojo, there was something, we were on an independent metal label, Century Media, before Century Media was a big label. I mean, we signed with Century Media in 1994, and we were their biggest selling U.S. band until we broke up in 2000, and they went on to have Lacuna Coil and Shadows Fall and some other successful bands.
Right.
But when we were on the label, they were still a small independent label in the States, and we were riding around in a van playing 280 to 320 shows a year, and we just didn't do a good job because we were young. We didn't do a good job being friends to each other and communicating properly, and the counterculture clash that made us so powerful also caused us to have lots of problems as well, because we did see the world through different glasses, and it was just so it's an imperfect marriage, but it's one that's worth working on because the end result is so good. And I always remember people saying that, you know, if Pete Townsend and Roger Daltrey got along great, maybe it wouldn't be as good a band. And maybe there's something to be said between the Mick Jagger, Keith Richards tension and friction that creates something magic. And so I keep that in mind when we're working together, that maybe that anger that we rage in each other's faces from time to time, maybe that's good for creating something that is a little more dangerous than the average radio rock band. That's, to me, there's so many bands writing great songs, but they haven't given me a reason to care about them. Like, in the last 5 years, there's just such a barrage of bands that there's a lot of talent and there's a lot of good stuff, but I don't know that I believe it, or I don't, it's just something about it. And when I play in Stuck Mojo, I know it's real.
Right.
And there's something magic about that. So, yeah, even though there was a lot of band-aids and crutches that needed to be dealt with and applied to our relationship, there's still a lot of open wounds, and I don't know how it's going to moving forward. Honestly, I haven't said this to anybody outside of my manager. I don't know how long it'll last because it is so volatile, but it's worth it's the crazy girlfriend relationship or boyfriend relationship where the sex is so good that you just freaking you work on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Good analogy.
Yeah, it is. It's, I don't know. It's Fleetwood Mac. It's all those things, except for we're not nearly as good and as talented as them. But there's something magic there.
And, I hear you.
And it's worth working through.
Well, I can't wait to hear what you guys come up with. And when do you think we would hear a new release from the reunited Stuck Mojo?
Well, we're going to do is we're going to self-finance the record so that we're in a better position when we're looking for a home for it with the record label. So we're doing that this summer. We're not crowdfunding it. We're just going to pay for it ourselves. And we have, four or five labels that have said we want it, not shown interest, but said we want the album, please. So we know it's going to be easy to find a home, but once the album's done, instead of us asking for money up front to make the album, we'll just ask them for a marketing plan and a distro plan and let them hear the completed album, and then we can hear them tell us what they're going to do with it. And I would hope that we're looking at it first of January, February of next year.
Excellent.
I think that's probably realistic because we won't even be finished recording it until the 1st of August. Andy's coming over here to Atlanta for the month of July, and then we'll mix sometime in August. So, you've been around the music industry long enough to know you can't shore up a deal in a month. It's going to take a little time, and then there's going to be set up and all that stuff. So I imagine we can look forward to something first of next year.
And before we go, I do want to talk to you, of course, about Fozzy, your band with Chris Jericho. I am psyched to see you guys this summer. I'm going to be up in Heavy Montreal, the massive festival up in Montreal, Canada, and you guys are going to be up there playing. I hope we can hook up after the show. And where did you actually first come in contact with Chris Jericho?
I met him backstage at a WCW wrestling event at the arena in Greenville, South Carolina. And Stuck Mojo had done a music video with a few wrestlers and put out a video for a song called Rising. And we were doing some cross-promotion stuff with WCW, which was Ted Turner's branch of professional wrestling. And Chris was employed by WCW at the time. And I met him backstage, and we just got to talking about music, and we loved the same bands. We were both massive Maiden fans, and then we were like, and he was like, man, I love Stryper. I was like, dude, you love Stryper? I freaking love Stryper.
Cool.
And then we were going crazy just talking about all the bands that we grew up listening to, and he was like, I love Kick-Ax. I said, man, I saw Kick-Ax open for Judas Priest on the Defenders of the Faith tour, and we just had one of those, like, immediately, we're going to be best buds. And Fozzy started off as a cover band. That's all we did. We played Priest, Maiden, except Motley Crue. We had fun playing covers, and it was a great outlet for me to get away from Stuck Mojo because at that point there was tons of tension in the band as always. And Chris, being a professional wrestler, had a crazy schedule, but occasionally he would have time off, and he played bass and sang when he was in high school, never anything beyond kind of small high school dance stuff or the small club shows in Winnipeg, but it was a passion for him. And the band just, without any kind of blueprint moving forward or any preconceived notion which happened, Fozzy Osbourne, as it was called back then, became a serious band, and we started making records. And here we are, we're here 16 years later. It's crazy to even think about.
Yeah.
But, I will never quit doing Fozzy because it is a fun, amazing band. And it nurtures me musically in a different way or satiates me in a different way. It's more of a polished metal band. It's a two-guitar band. So it speaks to a different side of, because because it is a little bit more, I write for that band differently. I write more tight metal riffs, and it's a little more melodic, whereas Stuck Mojo was dirty and a little greasier and a little looser on the outside. So one, if Fozzy takes a little bit more from Metallica and Megadeth, then Stuck Mojo takes a little bit more from, you know, kind of the Pantera and the Van Halen side of things, you know,
right.
the approach.
And I mean, I thought, you know, Do You Want to Start a War, the album you guys put out less than a year ago at this point, I'm talking about Fozzy, of course, at this point, was really diverse. I mean, you guys were really hit a lot of different musical styles on that record and just some great stuff on that record.
Thank you, man. And that's part of the beauty of that band is that it allows me to write a lot of different things, you know, because that's the one thing about Chris is that because he kind of started his career like learning to sing stuff from other artists, that he became really good at having an ability to kind of change his voice, so he can do some ballady stuff, or he can do some really aggressive guttural stuff, or he can sing melodically. And it makes it easy for me to really write diversely. So if I want to do something that's a little bit more ethereal and a little bit more open, I can do that, or I can do something super heavy and aggressive and up tempo. So it's, again, you know, for me, it really comes down to, I don't do it for the gigs anymore. I do really enjoy playing live, but that's like, if I'm scoring things that I love about music, I score playing live like a 7 or an 8. Being in the studio is a perfect 10 for me, even when I have rough days and I'm not playing well, or my writing is not where I'm not coming up with stuff that I'm feeling great about. My passion is creating, and that's just where my heart is right now. So I'm looking forward to doing a new Fozzy record as well. We've already started kind of...
Really? Wow.
If you start on it, as soon as we finish the Stuck Mojo record, if I start working on Fozzy material, it won't be out until next summer anyway. So you have to start thinking in terms of getting things moving sooner than later. Otherwise, you know, I'll start thinking about Fozzy way too late, and then we'll be 2 years later before the record's out.
Right on. Well, Rich, thank you for joining us on this episode of Talking Metal. Again, I hope to see you in person this summer up in Montreal. And maybe we can even have you back at that point for we're going to be set up in the press tent doing like live podcasts and stuff. So we'd love to have you back on at that point.
I'd be honored. As you said, we got to hang out, and I feel like we struck up a great kinship. And so please feel free to, if you have any more questions about what it's like to be a crazy kid living in the Georgia suburbs, please call me, and I will look forward to seeing you at Heavy Metal Montreal. Thanks for your time, man.
What you just heard was my interview with Rich Ward of Stuck Mojo and Fozzy. Mitch and I will be checking out his band Fozzy, which of course has Chris Jericho on vocals. We'll be checking them out at Heavy Montreal this summer. We hope to see you guys up there. Today's episode is brought to you by Heavy Montreal. We played a little commercial for them at the top of the show. And if you're down in the States, especially in the Northeast, there's really no excuse for not attending this concert, because there is really something for everyone, you know, from Slipknot to Extreme to Lita Ford to Pentagram to who else, Mitch?
They've announced Gojira, Abath,
from France.
Lamb of God, Bullet for My Valentine. The band that everybody seems to be really excited about is Alexis on Fire, which for some reason has the younger generation really excited. I get a lot of people saying, hey, I need to go see that. So
cool.
We'll see. You know, we'll see. We'll see what they're all about. And Cold Chamber is going to be there. So no, it's a great, great festival. I look forward to it every year. And of course, this year they've expanded to 3 nights instead of 2 nights. And you can't go wrong. You know, I've started interviewing some of these guys for the one-on-one podcast. I had Don Dokken, Ray Luzier of Korn on. We're looking forward to it. Getting excited, actually.
Cool. So I know we just posted the episode with Ray, that I'm talking about, one-on-one with Mitch LaFon, your podcast. We just posted that episode. What's next? Will it be the Don Dokken interview for next week?
Yeah, we've got Don coming up, and what was great about the Don interview is I asked him about George Lynch, and I said, listen, let's forget all about the negative stuff. We know that. Just tell me about that first day he joined the band, and what did you see in him? Let's stay positive. And he gave me a really great answer, and it was nice to hear Don say, hey, he's a great guitarist, he's a great this, he's a great that. It's a little bit different than the, oh, we broke up and I can't stand him stuff that we've heard over the last 15 years. So definitely check that out. But yeah, Don is going to be coming up next. We've got, Jim Pederick of Survivor came on and did a little thing. And the next one after that is going to be Don Dawkins. So in a week from now, about.
Cool. And I just saw this band Muse in concert on Friday, just put on just a great show. Their new record is coming out, and it's produced by Mutt Lange. And speaking of Mutt Lange, he produced one of our favorite bands back in the day, Def Leppard, and you just saw them in Canada, up in where? Right in Montreal?
Yeah, Montreal. It was an incredible show. Honestly, I have seen Def Leppard as far back as 87 on the Hysteria tour when Tesla opened for them, and they've had some great shows, and they've had some shows where they could have done better. But this show on May 2nd at the Bell Center, first of all, it was sold out, which blew my mind. I honestly thought it was going to be papered, and for those who don't understand the term paper, that's when promoters and stuff give away free tickets just to fill the venue and make everybody feel nice and warm on the inside, and it was sold out. 13,000 people showed up for this thing, and the band was fantastic. You know, Joe Elliott has lost a little bit of weight. He wasn't looking so good like 2, 3, 4 years ago. Now he just looked good. He sounded good. Vivian Campbell is definitely back. The whole health issues he's been having obviously are behind him, because he just looked good, sounded good, smiling, playing like a maniac. Great set list. Played a couple of rare ones. They did Saturday Night, High and Dry, and they did Paper Sun. Yeah, you know, they mixed it up enough. Of course, they had to play the hits, but that's just the way it goes. Fantastic. And I am certainly looking forward to them coming back. And I think, you know, last year we had Twisted Sister at Heavy Montreal that delivered that sort of melodic rock, whatever you want to call it. I think Def Leppard would definitely be a band that Heavy Montreal should consider one year, because they'll get the crowd going. They will definitely get the crowd going. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, the one thing that Def Leppard has that, you know, they have the hardcore fans like you and I who want to hear all those rare old cuts. But, you know, more importantly, the general public just love Def Leppard. And I think that they really appeal to the masses. And that's a great thing when you're looking to bring people to, a festival. And I think they would be also just a great addition that the moms would love, the kids mm-hmm. would love, you know, everyone, universal hard rock band that so many people love. And I think they'd be great on Heavy Montreal.
Their songs just transcend generations and musical genres. You know, I'll reference Twisted Sister. They came on and you had a bunch of metalheads and younger kids who didn't know. And then all of a sudden they hear I Wanna Rock and they go, oh, yeah, I know that one. Then they hear We're Not Going to Take it, and they go, I know that one. And they're into it. And I think Def Leppard is that kind of band where they'll play a couple of songs like High and Dry and Paper Sun, and fans will go, yeah, okay, whatever. And then all of a sudden they'll hit Pour Some Sugar on Me or Fooling, and then you'll just see 40,000 people go, yeah, I'm with you. And I think it'd be a great addition. So hopefully, fingers crossed, that'll happen.
All right, excellent. And again, we had Rich Ward on the show earlier. What we're going to do right now is play another one of Rich's songs. This is from his other band, Stuck Mojo, and this is going way back. This is a classic from the mid-90s, again, by one of the first bands to combine hip-hop and rock, and this song is called Mental Meltdown by Stuck Mojo.
My dreams as I turn to now, it's something now. wreck, scale, A to Z, say more. Yeah, no adventure to sink the picture out. Who's the pimp trying to turn me out? Who's with it? Who's crazy with it? Is it who you know that you know?
Going round.
Mentally melting down. Hear the sound of the same old same going round. Mentally melting down. Hear the sound of the same old same going round. Mentally melting down. Hear the sound of the same old same going round. Mentally melting down. Hear the sound of the same old same going round. Is still burning. Tongue steady. Turning. Mad. Scheming. Suckers double teaming. The tag switched up, now who's coming in last? Hey, say, number something. DJ, play, play, blah, blah, all day. No way I'll pay. Who's lifting? Who's trendy gifting? Is it who you know what you know? Who's lifting? Who's really gifting? Is it who you know what you know? Mentally melting down. Hear the sounds of the same old same going round.
What you just heard was a little more Rich Ward. That was Mental Meltdown by his band Stuck Mojo, who are now back together with the original lineup in the studio with Andy Sneap. And wow, can't wait to hear what they come up with this time. So great
Did
stuff.
Did you just say Andy Sneap?
Yeah.
That is great. What he did with Accept, he took that band basically out of the ashes and rebuilt them into a bloody machine. So if he's going to do that with Stuck Mojo, I'm in. I want to hear that.
Absolutely. He did some great work with Accept. He's worked with bands like Arch Enemy. Just such a talented guy. And I'm psyched to hear what he does with Stuck Mojo, which is, you know, definitely different style than some of these bands he's recently been working with. But he did work with Stuck Mojo back in the day. So, you know, he does know these guys. And so not only is it a reunion of the original members of Stuck Mojo, it's also a Stuck Mojo reunion with Andy. So exciting stuff. Can't wait to hear what they come up with. I also wanted to mention, you know, John Ostrowski, known to you guys by the name Astronomy. Obviously, and Mitch, I know you know John, obviously his involvement with Talking Metal for the first 5 years, you know, we're going on 10 years, was a real 50-50 thing with me. And in some ways, John just because of the way he looks and his whole get up and attitude and stuff, I feel like when we'd go out in public, he was more recognized than I was, which is totally cool. I thought that was great. But I've had a number of people ask me what his deal is and if he's even a part of talking metal anymore. And I just wanted to say that, you know, John and I hadn't really spoke for a while, and we recently caught up at that metal show when Ace was there. And, you know, he apologized. He's had some personal stuff going on, and he's just so busy with Ace and his real job and working at Gibson that there isn't a lot of time left in his schedule for talking metal. And I basically told John, I said, you know, a guy who's been one of my best friends since 1987, I said, well, you just tell me when you're ready to come back to talking metal, because, you know, I can't keep asking him to do it, you know, and that's something I've done a lot of lately. And he just doesn't have the time, quite frankly. And he says he wants to get back to it at some point. So I just wanted to put it out there that there's an open invitation to him to come back in any type of involvement with it, you know, that he wants, whether that's a small involvement or a big 50% involvement like it used to be back in the day. He is welcome back here at any time.
Yeah, that's good to hear.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And also, what else did I want to mention? I think, that we have Talking Metal t-shirts for sale in the merch section on talkingmetal.com. Please check out Mitch's podcast, which is One-on-One with Mitch LaFon. It's on Spreaker, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, iHeart, and it's great stuff. Mitch delivers always a weekly, sometimes bi-weekly show, and there's usually, what, two interviews in the show, or are you sticking
with
one?
Well, actually,
now?
I've sort of changed the format. I'm going to go down to one interview per show, and I'm going to try to do a show just on Monday rather than two. I just felt that some of the artists were getting lost in the mix, and I didn't think that was fair. You know, I would do an interview with whatever Joey Kramer and maybe a guy from Anthrax and stick them on the same episode, and Brave Words or Blabbermouth or any of these would pick up on just one and sort of ignore the other. And I didn't think that was right. So I'm going to stick to one interview. And also, I think shows that were an hour and a half probably were a little bit too long. So I'm going to try to stick to one interview, half an hour, 45 minutes, do it once a week. And we'll see how that goes, especially during the summer months. It'll give me a little break and not keep me as busy all the time, which will be nice for me as well. And, over on the YouTube page, maybe I'll throw some leftover interviews or some extraneous or other stuff up there just to keep that exciting too. But no, for the podcast, I'm going to go to one guest once a week. I think that's best for everyone.
Absolutely. So there you go. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. And Don Dokken, can't wait to hear that interview. That should be great. And I think, you know, kind of to circle back to that, what you were saying about the George Lynch stuff, it is interesting because I do think that a lot of times when I hear an artist say, oh, well, it's the media, you know, manipulating stuff. A lot of times when I hear that, I don't believe it. But in Dokken's case, I do feel like there's this constant push, and I would say even with Kiss too, you know, to bring up the negative and to get people, you know, talking shit about ex members and whatnot. And I think that's great. I can't wait to hear Don talk about George Lynch in a positive light.
Yeah. And you know, you're very right also about Kiss, and a lot of it I really feel is in how you ask the question. And then a lot of the interviews or interviewers are really like, so tell me some dirt about Ace. Tell me some dirt about Peter, you know, and with Dokken's, tell me some dirt about George. Is it true that he used to spit on your back? And it's of course, you're going to, of course, answer it honestly and say, yeah, he did. And yes, and then it just becomes this negative stuff. And I wanted the interview to be different. I didn't want another one of Don Dokken says George, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and we also got him to say some great stuff about Jeff Pilson. Talks a lot about Jeff's ability to learn any recording thing from 4-track to 8-track to 12-track. But talks about how the different instruments he plays, how vocally we compared him to Michael Anthony, that his backing vocals were as important to the Dawkins sound as Michael Anthony's was to Van Halen. And I think it's just refreshing to hear, you know, 20 years on, Don talking about these guys and saying how important they were to the band, rather than, no, there'll never be a reunion. And it's not Don's fault. It's a lot of times that's the question that the interviewer asks, and that's the response that they're trying to elicit. And I just wanted to be different.
Cool.
And I think, you know, it was a good chat with Don, and it'll be a great show in Montreal. They've got Mark Bowles in the band, who of course sang with Uli John Ross, Yngwie Malmsteen, and a bunch of other bands. And Don was very honest about it. He said, listen, I got Mark because he can sing and he can fill in those high spots that I can't hit anymore. And the band just really does sound bigger and better these days. And so, you know, no, it was a very positive chat. And I'm looking forward to getting that out there for fans to hear. And I'm looking forward to August 9th, when them with Warrant and Within Temptation, Lamb of God and Slipknot all share a stage. I mean, you know, what better band to open for Slipknot than Warrant?
Very good. Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be a fun night. You know, Nuclear Assault, Cold Chamber, then Doc and Warrant, Lamb of God, Slipknot. I mean, hello.
Yeah.
That is going to be some very eclectic performances right there for you.
Absolutely. Hey, and while we're having you as our co-host here on Talking Metal, you're the KISS expert. I always need to check in with you on KISS news. What it seems like there's a lack of news lately. What is going on? It seems kind of quiet. What are Paul and Gene currently doing, do you think?
You know, you're very right. It is really quiet. They did the South American tour. They've got a European sort of summer vacation coming up in terms of touring. But that's really about it. There doesn't seem to be any news on the KISS movie that you wanted the best, you got the best, which they announced a couple of years ago. There seems to be no movement on that. There seems to be no movement on KISSology 4. There seems to be absolutely no talk about a new KISS album. There was some rumors of a new Paul Stanley album. I haven't heard anything recently. It really seems as though we're doing these summer vacations, and then there's an abyss. There really doesn't seem to be anything planned. Now, of course, KISS doesn't let stuff go unplanned. I'm sure they've got something concocting and blah, 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 and they just haven't released it to anybody yet. But for the general fan, it seems to be go see them in Europe this summer, and hey, we'll see you eventually. Yeah, so we'll see, you know. And they've got their LA KISS team, which, speaking of an abyss, they have definitely fallen into one. They can't win. I really think that's going to be their last season. AMC was wise enough to bail out after one. I think Gene, Paul, and Doc are going to bail out after two, but who knows?
But Paul has said that they're doing another season of the TV show, right? So are they getting picked up by another network or something?
You know, I have no idea. That they might be just filming it themselves and we'll throw it up on a YouTube channel.
They're I think is what they did for season one, and then they, you know, sold it or did some sort of distribution deal with it with AMC. Interesting stuff. We do have the Scooby-Doo movie coming up, so
you're right about that.
That KISS and Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, you know, and as far as a second season of the LA KISS tour, I think that's mostly wishful thinking. But who knows? There doesn't seem to be all the excitement and all the pomp and circumstance of years past. Yeah, there is the KISS cruise, the KISS Alive cruise coming up, but there doesn't seem to be a long-term commitment to anything. So who knows, man? You know, at what, 63, 64, I certainly can excuse them from planning 10 years down the road at this point. Maybe it's time that they kick up their heels and then take some time off and just, you know, enjoy what KISS was at this point.
Absolutely. Great. Well, Mitch, thanks for joining us as co-host, and also thanks were conducting the interview we're about to hear with Chris Impellitteri and Rob Rock of the band Impellitteri. We're going to hear some classic music by them right now going into the interview. We're going to hear Stand in Line off the Stand in Line record by Impellitteri. And then we'll end today's show after Mitch's interview with these guys with the song Emperor of Lies, which is off the new studio album by Impellitteri, which is called Venom, right?
Yes, Venom, like the band. But
right on.
They're not singing about Kronos. They're doing their own thing, of course.
Excellent. Cool. So here's a little Impellitteri, followed by Mitch's interview with them, and then again ending with some new music by them. Okay, thanks, Mitch.
You're very welcome. Speaking with Chris and Rob from Impellitteri. Is that how you say the name?
Perfect pronunciation. Huh? You did better than I do.
There
I
you
can't
go.
Pronounce my own name, but you did it. Impellitteri.
Impellitteri. There you go. Band's been around since 1988, Chris. Long storied career. New album is Venom. Why don't we start there? Who comes up with the music first or the concept for the album? Is it you, Chris, that brings it over to Rob, or do you sort of both get together and say, hey, it's time?
Well, I mean, we've been writing partners for pre-Impellitteri release of 87. We were in a band called Vice together.
Right.
So we kind of grew up, musically speaking, in the clubs. And so musically, the way at least our relationship works is a lot of times I'll write the music, come up with a riff or whatever, and then I give it to Rob. And he basically has carte blanche, do whatever you will. And, you know, sometimes I'll say, hey, listen, this is kind of a melody I heard in my head when I was playing this riff.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes I go, oh, that's great. Other times I go, oh, that sucked. You're horrible. Stop trying to be a singer. You know, and so he'll do it. He'll do his thing. So to be honest, I mean, it always starts with me, yes, writing the music. And then I give that to Rob, and then he does his magic. And that's how it becomes Impellitteri.
Is that about right, Rob?
Yeah, it's a little deeper than that, I think, because, you know, Chris comes up with great riffs and stuff, and then he does hand it off to me, and I try to come up with two or three melody ideas, and then I present him my best one, and if he likes it, that's the end of it. You can go with it, you know? But if he has an idea, like he said, from riffing and from writing the song, he'll say, you know, why don't you try this or something? And, you know, a good part of the time, it's a great melody, and then I'll take that and run with it. So it's, and then he comes up with some working titles too, and end up being the titles that we use. Like Venom was started from a working title. So
so go ahead.
We just our main thing between Chris and I is we want longevity. It's since day one, and longevity means good songs. So it doesn't matter who comes up with the idea. The best idea is what we want to go with, and I think that's how we've been able to continue writing albums after albums, because we concentrate on the songs.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the last album, Wiccan Maiden, was in 2009, a little six-year break or gap, however you want to qualify it. What made you decide that, okay, 2015 is the time? Who came up with the it's now time to record? Chris?
Well, actually started getting called from some of the labels saying, hey, we want another Impellitteri record. You know, Rob had been working on his solo band.
Mm-hmm.
I did a side project called Animetal USA, which is really anime-centric and really designed for or targeting a specific market, which was Japan.
Right.
And originally I was going to do the record much sooner with Rob. I really wanted to follow up with Wicked Maiden around 2011, because, you know, we try to have these 2.5-year windows. However, in that cycle, you know, the Animetal thing I thought was going to be a project. It ended up turning into 3.5 years.
Right.
You know, it was a really successful project in Japan. So that was taking a lot of my time, and Rob was busy with his stuff. So it wasn't intentful, but there was a blessing. Because it took so long, I had written a lot of riffs that were basically sitting, collecting dust. And it gave me time to get away from them, you know, because one of the problems as a writer, you know, you write something and you often think, oh, this is great. This is wonderful. This is awesome. People are going to love this. And it's not until you get away from it, you know, start working on other music or do other projects, come back to it with fresh ears and realize, oh my gosh, that's horrible. What was I thinking? So with this record, because we had that break, we were able to listen to a lot of these original ideas and say, oh my gosh, that's really good, or that's terrible. And I think that's really was a blessing, having that six-year window.
Yeah, it really was. And of course, Animetal was produced by Marty Friedman, formerly of Megadeth. Did you get a chance to work with him at all on the music, or was it one of these situations?
Of course. No, okay. Of course. Marty, on the first Animetal record, Marty sent all the demos to me. I mean, he basically demoed all of that, because anime, it's, you know, they have a very popular culture.
Right.
And there's famous anime music that's been written for anime movies and television. So what Animetal USA were doing is they were following an original Japanese band in the early 90s called Animetal.
Right.
And it was Sony's idea to put together an American version of this. And they wanted to put together big names, and they selected everybody. Hand-selected, you know, Rudy Sarzo, myself, you know, Scott Travis originally, and Mike Vissera. And basically the idea was just basically kind of combined famous heavy metal riffs of other bands like Black Sabbath, Ozzy, stuff like that, and it'd have Mike sing anime music over it, and then let me do my thing. So that's how it initiated. And I'm sorry, I'm losing my train of thought.
Well, it's not a problem. I mean, is that project, because I actually interviewed Rudy about it. Is the project done, or is there something that you might pick up in like 2 or 3 years again and say, hey, it's time for another one?
You know, I honestly don't. I'm told by the management group and the label that there is going to be another record. I think they've signed with Warner Music for us. Cool. But Impellitteri is my priority. I mean, the thing I've got with Rob, that takes precedence over everything. So if I have time, if we're on break, you know, then yeah, maybe. But if not, Impellitteri is first.
Yeah, and let's get back to that, the new album, Venom. You also recruited John, and I don't know if you say Deet or Deddy, who got a chance to play with Anthrax and Slayer and Iced Earth and all those wonderful bands. Tell me a little bit about bringing him into the band, and what does he add to the sound?
Well, I mean, our original drummer was Glenn Sobel, and I love
Alice Cooper.
I mean, he's really good. Yeah, exactly, and I love Glenn. I mean, he's been like one of our brothers. I mean, would you agree with that, Ron?
Yeah. Glenn's been with us for quite a while.
And he, by the way, I know him, and I've had a chance to meet him and hang out with him. He is one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. And in terms of what he does on drums, especially with Alice Cooper, holy mackerel. I mean, what a talent. What a talent.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You're right on the money, Mitch, with that. And, you know, that was a big criterion for us, because with Impellitteri, I mean, I've had the fortune, so has Rob, we've all played with some amazing drummers, right? Rob played with Tommy Aldridge and Driver.
Yep.
You know, I have Pat Torpey from Mr. Big.
Yep.
People don't even realize when we first, Rob, do you remember when we first did the demo for Grin and Bear It? Do you remember who the drummer that was demoing, who was coming over to your apartment at that time in L.A.?
Yeah, I do.
You remember Eric Singer?
From Kiss. Yeah.
And the only Eric Singer. There you go.
Yeah, exactly. So we've been around a lot of great drummers, and Glenn was absolutely just a great compliment to the band. So, you know, I called Glenn after Wicked Maiden to do Venom, and he was like, oh, yeah, I'd love to do it. But he was committed to do the Alice tour because they were out with Motley Crue.
Yep.
So at that point, I was like, my God, what are we going to do? And Rob had some people. And I thought about, you know, I just come off the road with John Deddy.
Right.
You know, doing Animetal. We did a lot of, you know, like arena dates in Japan. And he was just really great. And I love thrash. As a matter of fact, the first record Rob and I did, which is called the Impellitteri Black EP, that record was borderline thrash with just great melodic vocals and screaming and shredding. So Deddy, I thought, man, what a great way to recapture that fire.
Yeah. Oh,
you know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
And plus,
I was just going to say, anybody who can play like Charlie Benente is definitely a talent. I mean, anybody who can, you know, drum along to what he's done is definitely worth having on your team. Right?
Yeah. What's interesting about Venom, and again, it's really important because Impellitteri is a band. It's, you know, you got four guys making equal contribution, and John, he's the foundation, right? The drums.
Right.
And because he had just finished touring with Anthrax, and he did some dates with Slayer's drummer, he was just on fire. So we brought him in, and man, in the studio, he killed it. It just, everything came to life. It was like all four of us, the synergy, you know, all the sum of all parts was just so much greater than any one of us. And I think it really started with his drum tracks.
Oh, absolutely. Hold on a second here. We've mentioned Asia with Animetal and stuff, but the band itself has focused a lot on sort of the Asian markets. Is there going to be more of a push on the North American market with this release? Is there going to be a North American tour?
Well, I'm talking to you.
True.
For the
true
first
enough.
Time, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I'm in
Montreal. Absolutely. The answer is yes.
Okay.
We are definitely trying to push for an American and European full-blown tour. We are absolutely releasing our record for the first time in years in the United States, Europe, Canada, everywhere. And obviously Frontiers are doing a great job of bringing this to the market. I mean, we've got still about 3.5 weeks, I think, to the U.S. release.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got 3 new music videos coming. So it should be really exciting. I'm a little nervous. I don't know how people are going to respond to us. You know, I don't know if they're going to love us or they're going to hate us. But either way, we're going to definitely attempt this.
Well, you know, listen, I think they're going to like it. It's really, from what I've heard on the videos, and I've actually had the album sent to me, it's just full throttle. I mean, it's nonstop. It's in your face. It's the way it should be. Graham Bonnet was in the band for a couple of albums. What did he bring in terms of vocal prowess to the band? And what does Rob bring to the band? And now you got Rob on the phone, so he's going to hear your answer.
Yeah, I mean, listen, so I'll tell you basically how Graham ended up in the band originally. Right. When we first did the Impellitory Black EP, Rob and I, there's something magical between our chemistry. And I just think it's perhaps because we grew up together as kids, playing in bar bands together, playing cover songs. And I think because we shared in that experience, we kind of developed similar musical tastes and also a writing style kind of evolved out of that. But, you know, when with the EP, we had released it, you know, Rob had found another project, I believe it was in Germany, that he was really passionate about and decided to kind of follow that path. And at this point, I'm freaking out going, oh, my God, no, don't leave. I mean, it's like we're starting to blow up. We're, you know, the cover of Circus magazine, Kerrang magazine, loves our record, you know, the Impellitory Black EP. Oh, and by the way, as I keep saying Impellitory Black EP,
right.
A couple of guys in the media asked me this, and I think it's probably good to bring this up. We did call the Impellitory first album, which is called the Black EP, has songs Lost in the Rain, Burning, Playing with Fire, and I'll Be Searching.
Right.
That was done 3 years before Metallica's Black Album. Just to set precedent, right?
And as a fun fact, the Black Album is actually not called the Black Album. Its real title is Metallica. It's a self-titled album, and fans have decided to call it the Black Album. So... You definitely win. You got it out there first, and you actually called it the Black EP.
Exactly. So, but going back to the original question. So, right. You know, Rob went off to pursue that, and I was dumbfounded. I didn't know what to do. And I had signed with Relativity and Sony Records, and they wanted another record.
Right.
And so basically I had gotten called from a band called Alcatraz when I was a kid, when I first came to L.A., to see if I'd be interested in replacing Yngwie Malmsteen.
Right.
And so basically from that day, I had met Graham Bonnet, and I really liked him, albeit he was quite a bit older than me, you know. But I liked him, and I thought, you know, this would maybe be a good time to just take a break and just do a side project, you know, until I could figure out what to do. So Impellitory's Stand in Line, to be honest, was never supposed to be an Impellitory record, you know. The album, as much as, you know, some people like it, others hate it, and I'm in that group. I mean, sometimes I have periods of time where I like the music, but I also realize that it's not an Impellitory record by any means.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's really what I started with Rob and everything around, you know, the Graham Bonnet records, you'll hear are much more aggressive.
Right.
So I was always a metal kid at heart. So, you know, with Graham, I mean, what I think he brought to the band, he had such an amazing, unique voice. You know, I really appreciate what he did, especially with like Rainbow, Michael Schenker Group, Alcatraz. Mm-hmm. And I really am indebted to him because, to be honest, I think one of the big reasons we're popular in Japan is because of Graham Bonnet. You know, it was almost like, you know, our first Impellitory Black EP did really well in Japan, but Stand in Line was monstrous. And I think it was because, you know, Graham had been in Rainbow. And at that time, Rainbow were massive.
Right.
You know, and of course, yeah, and so I think what happened is because Graham played with Michael Schenker Group, Richie Blackmore, Yngwie, Steve Vai, and then he joined Impellitory for that project. I think people just embraced me. It almost didn't matter if I was good or I sucked. They were just making me a new, you know, guitar thing, hero, whatever they were calling me, right? So I really feel indebted, and I think he brought that to us.
Right, and then you brought him back in 2002 for System X.
Right. And at that point, that's when, you know, and Rob was doing a solo project. So at that point, I always, what would it have been like if Graham and I would have done a metal record?
Right.
You know, Stand in Line is really not by any means a metal record. So System X was every intent of let's do a hardcore metal record. And it was fun. You know, we had Mudrock mixed it from a guy who did produce like Godsmack and Avenged Sevenfold. And so that was it. And Graham, I mean, my God, he sings like a lion. You know, he's insanely good. So it was definitely an honor.
Oh, absolutely. And Rob, you know, while you're off doing those solo albums and, you know, you see the Graham Bonnet albums come out, are you feeling any resentment? Or are you like, oh, hey, good for him. We're both doing our own thing. Or do you sit back and go, man, I could have sang that better. What were your reactions?
No, I've never had any resentment at all, actually.
Okay.
And when I've heard Graham Bonnet, to me, like Rainbow Down to Earth was one of my favorite albums when I was growing up.
Absolutely.
Bar none. And when Graham Bonnet, you know, singing with Chris, Stand in Line, I loved that record. To me, you know, to me, it was right up that same alley. And and I love that alley. So I really enjoyed the record. And then when Graham did the second one, I'm like, wow, Graham is Graham. I don't think Graham Bonnet compares to anybody. His voice, the way he writes, the lyrics, the way he does stuff is very unique. And me as a fan of Graham, I really enjoyed it because I love Chris's playing. So, you know, it was cool to hear it for me, but I never had any resentment towards it. And
but
I'm just glad that, you know, I'm mentioned in the same breath as Graham Bonnet, one of my childhood heroes.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, after you've done Crunch in 2000, why did you step away?
Well, it's just, you know, we had done Eye of the Hurricane. We did Answer to the Master, Screaming Symphony. We're doing a lot of stuff. And I wanted to branch out.
Okay.
And I didn't know if we were going to just continue down the same path. At that point, I don't think we really had, I think we were at the end of the deal. I'm not sure where we were at with that situation as far as JVC, but it was just, I just wanted to try something. I wanted to continue on with Intellitary, and I wanted to do both things. But I think at that point, in that time, you know, if you're in a band, you're in that band, and that's what you did.
Right.
And when I did a solo album, I think the band vibe might have been splintered a little bit. So, you know, Chris, you know, I got Graham to do another record, and I was doing my thing. And, you know, it's not like today where guys have to do two or three projects just to stay alive, you know?
Right, right, right.
So I think the timing of all things, just, you know, when you're in the moment, when you're passionate about what you write and what you want to do, it's just, things just happen the way they did, I think.
Yeah. Hey, Mitch, I can interject too, though, but I will say this as far as what Rob brings. I mean, if I really, and not because he's in the band again, right? But if you really listen, he started the band, he'll end the band. I mean, the reality is I really think he's the voice of Impellitteri. You know, I think he always has been, always will. You know, it was always the core sound of what we created with that first Impellitteri Black EP. Especially go listen, like, I mean, kids that don't know about us, just go on YouTube and listen to songs like Lost in the Rain, right? If you listen to Lost in the Rain, it's almost like what Venom is today. It has that same aggression, insane singing. I mean, Rob is singing, you know, in a stratosphere, tremendous power like a tenor, right? Great vibrato, all of that stuff. And, you know, the solos are all crazy. It's shredding. It's very technical, very classically based. So, you know, I mean, you almost hear where we are today. Mm-hmm. It just seems like it has continuity, right? And it's like a new step of growth for the band, but yet we're still on the same original path. We're sticking to our guns, if you will.
Yeah, and
I think that chemistry goes beyond just playing together, too. It's, I don't know, we're kind of like brothers, man. At least that's the way I feel. It's like, no matter what happens, no matter what goes on, we're always going to be friends. We're always going to be close. And when we write together, it works. And we both feel it, and it's an amazing chemistry there.
Yeah, and it really works. Venom is, again, like I said, it's a great-sounding record. Rob, you know, you're a born again Christian. Does that have any impact on what you write and the lyrical content?
Well, I think it does in the back of my mind type situation, but I'm very forward and very vocal about, I sing from my heart. So whatever's on my heart comes out. I'm not going to put it through a filter just to please a certain set of people. You know, I please myself as an artist. I please God as my own personal thing. And I think it is a personal thing. So, you know, when I'm writing songs like Empire of Lies, that's talking about basically the media lying to you. You know, you get one story from Fox, one from NBC, one from CNN, you know, it's in building nations with that. And sounds like Domino Theory, where it's about modern terrorism and stuff like that. I'm not sure those are Christian-themed lyrics, but it's honest. It's what's going on in the world today, and I think that's, to me, is real. That's what I think about, and when I hear the music, you know, and if I have, like, I've had a title, Domino Theory, for a while, it fit the song, and so I just go with it, man, because it's working, and it's good chemistry and it fits the song. And if I'm enjoying it and writing it, and I believe in it. So to me, that's the criteria. If I believe in the songs we're writing, then that should be enough, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. May I ask you one more question about that, or is that?
Yeah,
You know, a lot of times when people get to that point where they become born again, they've gone through some kind of struggle or things just aren't working and you just need that rebirth, that restart. What was it that got you to that point where you said, okay, it's time for a change and a positive change?
Well, I grew up in a Christian home, so okay. I've always been surrounded by it.
Okay.
And it's just, I think it's, I learned it, I believe it, I live it, and it's just a part of my life. I really didn't have that catastrophic moment.
Oh, okay.
You know, where I switched over or anything. It's always been a part of me, and it still is, you know?
Okay, good. Where do we go from here? So Venom comes out in April, and then what are the plans for touring? What are the plans for, do we make a live album? Do we start working on the next one? What's sort of the immediate future hold?
I know the immediate future is Japan. And, you know, the end of May, we're gonna get together and rehearse for that and go toward Japan.
Okay.
And that's what's in concrete at this moment. And the future plans, I'll give you over to Chris.
Yeah, Chris.
Yeah. Well, two things. I just want to interject something too, because I kind of struggle with this whole thing. You know, we get this label recently, because Rob, and by the way, Rob, that was a really good answer, because I think that's truthful, and I love that. You know, there's been a misconception with our band.
Okay.
You know, I've been doing interviews recently. A lot of people go, so you guys are known as a Christian metal band. I'm like, what? We've never been a Christian rock band, ever.
Okay. And by the way, I wasn't suggesting that at all. I was just asking.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but where I was going with that, but I encourage that. And listen, if you have a strong belief, right, and you're, you know, again, you're inherently positive and supportive to your faith, stick with your guns. Don't change. You know, I mean, I encourage that. It's like, look, a lot of guys, I see them putting down bands like Stryper, and I used to laugh at that. And I'm going, so who's the people that's doing this? You know, the death metal bands? Mm-hmm. It's like, screw them, because I'm listening to them, and 90% of them that I listen to, I think, fuck. They can't sing. Yep. They can't play. You know, and I'm not saying all of them. Some of them are very good musically.
Of course.
But, you know, it's the whole battle of good and evil. And I'm always like, dude, you know who wins in the end, right? Good.
Yeah.
Every time. So I'd rather be on the good side, buddy. You know? But anyways, you know, so I think people, if they're Christians, stick with your belief, man. That's awesome.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
But yeah, I get concerned because sometimes, you know, we're writing about things that might not be perceived in a positive light from someone that's Christian. I don't want to offend them. You know, I just want them to realize that, yes, Rob's absolutely Christian. I've even practiced. I've been in and out of it, right? So, you know, and again, you know, Glenn Sobel, Glenn was Jewish, you know, so everybody has their beliefs, and we're trying to make certain that everybody understands that, you know, you should stand behind what you believe in, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. And it wasn't any kind of, you know, political question or any kind of controversial question. It's just... you know, I've read over the years that a lot of the lyrics that Rob has written has had that kind of message into it. And I was just curious if that was true or if that was important to him. And, you know, that's about it. So,
yeah.
so please don't misconstrue my intention on that. But
oh, not at all. I was actually glad you asked it.
Okay, good. Yeah, because I'm never one to try to offend when doing an interview. So let's just finish with this then. 6 years have passed since Wicked Maiden. Are we going to wait 6 more years for the next one, or are you sort of hoping to get onto that sort of 2-year album tour cycle kind of thing?
Well, we're just in the beginning stages.
Absolutely.
Of this record. I mean, we haven't even released the record yet.
Absolutely.
I will tell you, as a band, Rob, myself, James, and John, we are ecstatic with the response we're getting for this record. And some of it, to be honest, is a little intimidating to me because I'm thinking, my God, I hope we can live up to the hype,
mm-hmm.
You know? And so having said that, the object right now is to spend the next year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever, promoting Venom, touring. Any place that will have us will come. Mitch, it might be your backyard, but it's going to be a great keg party. We're there.
Well, I hope it is. in Montreal, we have this festival called Heavy Montreal that takes place every year. And I'm kind of hoping that, you know, the 2015 lineup is all set in stone. But I'm certainly would love to see you here in 2016. Absolutely. I think it would be great for you.
Whoever the promoter is, throw our name.
Wherever, we'll go.
We got a following. We're there.
Well, the promoter is Evenko, so I'll have to put you in contact with them. But listen, last year there was Metallica and 80,000 people showed up. This year it's Slipknot and Lamb of God and Meshuggah and just a ton of great bands. And I think you guys would fit right in. Any last words?
Rob? Well, I don't know. I would just like to thank the fans out there that have followed us all these years and waited. Has it really been 6 years between albums?
6 years, yeah.
6 years for another album. It's like...
We thought you retired.
Sorry about that one, but I really think they're going to love what we came up with. I mean, we're really, really excited about it. And the album is just really kicking hard. And everyone that hears it loves it. So I'm thinking, let's go out and play for all the fans that we can. And I just thank you for all your support for all this time, you know?
And Chris, I'll ask you this. Is the album a lost art? You know, in this day of YouTube and iTunes singles and EPs, is putting together a collection of 10 songs, 12 songs, something still worth doing? Or should we just go to EPs from now on?
It's worth doing if you're passionate about it.
Okay.
So for us... I can say that we wrote a body of music that we were really proud of and we loved. And, you know, we mastered and performed it, recorded it, and now we're going to play it live. And I think, to be honest, I mean, basically doing that was really about being true to ourselves. It wasn't about, are we going to sell a million records and make $10 million off this record and tour cycle. You know, we've done really, really well in Japan, both monetarily and in sales, right? Yeah. Probably sold well over 1 or 2 million records just in Japan alone.
Wow.
So we've done very, very well. But the reality is at this point, it's about having fun now. So we're making music, and if it's 10 songs, so be it. If it's 3 songs in the future, we love them and want to tour behind them, that would take place or take precedent as well. So I don't have a safe answer to say, is it a lost art? I mean, from a monetary perspective, I mean, this record, we didn't do a cheap record. This was not a record where we did in our bedrooms.
Right.
You know, we went into NRG Studios, which is where Linkin Park did their latest record, Slash did his records there. We did Venom in that same room.
Right.
So, you know, the record budget was a very large budget. This was not some, you know, we're making a record for $15,000. You know, this would be in the tens of thousands, not well over $100,000, all in with real costs.
Right.
So, you know, again, will we ever get the money back? Don't know, don't care. All I know is we're really proud of this, and now we've got a tremendous body of work we can share with the entire world and tour behind.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to it. Chris, Rob, thank you. It's been a great pleasure. And hopefully we'll see you in Montreal, either at the Heavy Montreal Festival, and if not, hopefully at the Bell Center, opening for someone. It'd be great.
That
would be great.
Yeah, I look forward to meeting you out there.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, guys.
See you falling.